Welcome to the second half of We the People Radio here on September 1st, 2024. And Bill reminded me we had some little announcements. Okay, let's see. First is, if you are in Shasta County, there is a Republican headquarters. If you want Trump flags and gear and stuff like that and yard signs for Republican candidates running for office, you can find that at 150 East Cypress. It's the two-story brick building across from Lithia Chevrolet. Think about when you used to go to the hatch cover and you'd go up Hempstead. It's right there on the left. And same building as Pulse Urgent Care, so that ought to be enough info. If you need more, you can find it at ShastaGOP.com. And okay, over to you, Bill, for our sponsor, because I have a free advertisement of the week, but I got to look it up.
Yeah, look that up. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. And if you need a tractor, small tractor, up to, well, I don't know, up to 60 horse, say, that's not too small. But if you need a tractor, implements, mowers, anything turf-related, go up and see them. They've got a great inventory right now, and they'll make you a good deal. Summer's slowly coming to an end. Mowing season's going to pick back up again, and you don't want to
very get, slowly.
Yeah. You don't want to get caught without without your mower ready to roll. So if it needs a tune-up or needs to be looked at, go up and see them. Their service department is anxious and ready to work on your tractor. So go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call at 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da! Okay, my free advertisement of the week, should have done it a couple weeks ago, but we weren't here, is McDonald's Budget Printing here in Reading. Super nice people and super, super fast. I walked in with a flyer for a friend. She needed like 150 copies or 100 copies or whatever. And they're like, oh, we'll just do it right now. Like, what? Right now? Thank you. They're at 2647 Bocelli Lane. Phone number is 530-222-0322. They're right across from Liquor Barn there on Bocelli. So that's McDonald's Budget Printing. Highly recommend. Super nice people. They do the graphics if you want it. But if all you need is printing, it's, well, give you an idea. I spent $30 on, I don't know, 8 or 9 flyers for a project I was doing because they were two-sided, blah, blah, blah. But I got 100 other flyers for, I don't know, $25 or something. It was ridiculous. The cost was, I mean, it was ridiculous. So anyway, go see the nice folks at McDonald's. And our guest, Dr. Harry Bouyans, has got a whole lot of info for us. So we're right back to you, Harry. It's all you.
So there's this clip of the man talking, and I thought what we could do is I could do a little thing here that I, little stunt I pulled with Copilot, Microsoft's AI. And I told it, tell me more about Richard Stengel's background. And so it waxed lyrically in 5 points. His early career, collaboration with Nelson Mandela, government service, authorship and advocacy, and current role as executive director of the Committee to Protect Journalists. Mm-hmm. And in summary, says Copilot, in summary, Richard Stengel's journey spans journalism, collaboration with a global icon, government service, and advocacy for press freedom. His multifaceted background reflects his dedication to promoting informed dialogue and protecting the integrity of journalism worldwide. So, after Copilot generated that, I jotted down next to it, Harry thinks, quote, yeah, yeah, violin music. Does he also walk on water? This is the man who wrote Mandela's autobiography and then carefully removed his client's connection with the South African Communist Party. But he got caught out by both Rian Malan, author, and reality. So, going live, I then said to Copilot, You did not mention his creation of the Global Engagement Center and his public justification of the need for government propaganda. Comes the answer from Copilot. I apologize for the oversight. You are absolutely correct. Richard Stengel played a significant role in the creation of the Global Engagement Center during his tenure as Undersecretary for State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs. And then he goes on, says, let me provide more context, blah, 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 blah. And then it says, in summary, Richard Stengel's involvement in the GEC, that's the Global Engagement Center, and his perspectives on strategic communication highlight the ongoing challenges.
Propaganda is now strategic communication. Okay.
Yeah. And the ongoing challenges in an era of information warfare. Thank you for pointing out this crucial aspect of his career.
And thank you.
I wrote down here, my God, these people have a nerve. Do they so comprehensively believe their own BS? I guess the answer is yes.
But see, that's where most people won't dig a little deeper on a lot of this AI-generated information. It's absolutely edited and one-sided. But they read that and they go, yeah, see right there, he's a great guy. Well, he's doing a great job.
We call that curated knowledge. And just so that people know, if you go to the September 1st, 2024 page of WeThePeopleRadio.us, if you go on there, I did post that. I posted that whole clip. It's under the thing that says for today's show, and I did the little dialogue because it was so great. I thought, oh my gosh, this is the best. This is the best representation of how AI will, if it's even possible, to dumb down our world even more. It was not in Idiocracy, the movie, but it should have been, because honestly, this is the underpinning of our fall, if in fact we allow it to take any sort of lead role.
Yeah, I hear you. So now there's this little clip that I suggested. And I've done a quick check, maybe from about 14 seconds to 35 seconds. That should make the point.
Okay. Hey, Christina, can we do that? 14 to 35? We loaded it up on the news break. Super ahead of the schedule here.
And, you know, my old job at the State Department was what people used to joke as the chief propagandist job. We haven't talked about propaganda. Propaganda, I'm not against propaganda. Every country does it, and they have to do it to their own population. And I don't necessarily think it's that awful. And this idea news cartel, I mean, I was editor of Time in 2012 during that election, and I remember, you know, you're competing against cartels and everybody. I remember being on a panel with the then editor of the New York Times, who said, it's really hard to break through these days. This is the editor of the New York Times saying it's hard to break through. I wanted to jump off the platform. Like, what's it like for the rest of everybody?
So, okay,
I mean, there are cartels.
That's probably okay up to that.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously propaganda is terrific, and what's the problem?
Yeah, it's necessary.
We're just alarmists?
You just have to propagandize your own people.
Right. And you just have to be the one running the propaganda, actually. That's the bottom line is,
when Obama goes out of office, your thing that you created continues, still populated by your little dumb ponies. Yeah, and so these people know no end, okay? There's nothing they will not do. Before 13 July, I told another gentleman that I believe you know, Dan Happel, in a phone call, I told him, these people are going to engineer an attempt on Trump's life. I'm telling you that. You had better watch out for this.
Well,
there's going to be an attempt to kill Trump. I guarantee you that.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
Well, they're certainly not doing anything not promote it. I mean, some of the things they say, I think, is really just exciting people to go out and make a name for themselves with Trump. And I don't care what you say, they're I think the cause of a lot of this political assassination talk. I mean, they're hyping it.
Oh yeah, well, he's going to destroy democracy and blah blah blah. Even the, I mean, do you find it as funny in Canada as I mean, funny bad funny as some of us do here that. I think people outside of the United States realize we're a representative republic, and it's like our own citizenry hasn't gotten the memo. It's like we're not a democracy, you knuckleheads. What the heck?
Democracy is cool unless you disagree with the Democrat Party.
Right.
Then democracy is the evil that has to go.
Yeah, democracy is terrific as long as you're in the majority and the mob rule is,
hey, do I
is your
know
ruling
about
mob.
That?
Yeah.
Don't I just know about that? I was one tenth of the population, so
you've met the mob rule.
You know, yeah, absolutely. And this is the interesting thing about it. This is where I agree with Putin. Because he sat there one day at some other meeting where he was talking to young Russians, and they recorded this thing. And it's still out there on the internet somewhere. And he said, "The problem is." Everything the United States touches turns into Libya. Hmm. Those were his words.
Well, can't disprove
and
that.
It's not that the U.S. is the touch of death or anything like that. It's that he made those statements in Obama's time, and the U.S. at that point was on a crusade to bring democracy to everyone. I mean, Bush Jr. also had his speech about, don't worry, if we can just give people democracy, they will somehow wisen up and, you know, throw flowers around and be nice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where people get that garbage from.
Yeah, because everyone loves to be oppressed, right? So, take your oppressors and just let them tell you what's what and stop fighting it.
And Putin was saying that the U.S. is starting color revolutions everywhere, referring to the Orange Revolution and so forth in Ukraine. And, you know, the Arab Spring and I don't know what else, all that garbage. The point is that South Africa was the first color revolution. You want to see how it turned out?
Yeah, well, you live in Canada now, so enough said,
yeah,
right?
That's why.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I live in Canada, because the guys who were the majority, one of them looked me straight in the face in front of witnesses and said, no, you don't understand, Harry. Our aim is to get rid of all people like you. Says to my face in front of witnesses. Everybody else had eyes like saucers. Of course, they knew this guy was well-connected in the ANC government.
Terrific.
So this is where democracy shows its true color, and they will tell you to your face that they want to get rid of you, kill you, etc., etc. Okay? And then you need to decide what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Now, I could leave South Africa and come to Canada. Where are you going to go?
Well,
where exactly are Americans going to go?
Well,
so you got to decide whether you're going to stand and fight for what you understand America to be, or whether you're going to just roll over and just accept what Richard Stengel tells you the truth is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and with guys like that, who needs enemies?
I mean, we were like 3.5 million folks in South Africa. We had no fighting chance. Zero. Now, you've seen now, initially people wouldn't believe things when we said that they were being lied to. Now, ever since 2016, sort of like round about May 2016, which, as I recall it, is when Trump was anointed as the candidate, starting that moment, Americans have received the same treatment as what we received in South Africa in the 1980s and early 90s. Now you've seen for yourselves what this media monster will do. You've seen for yourselves the depth of depravity that it will sink to. You've seen for yourselves what it is prepared to do. Okay? Well, they got away with it, doing it to us. We didn't have a hope in hell against it. But that doesn't mean I should shut up and not warn you. Yeah. Bill, you had a question earlier, and I owe you an answer, and you used terminology in the U.S., sort of social terminology, and in South Africa. In South Africa, today still, whether people want to hear it or not, today still, there are four groupings of people. They are called white, black, colored, and Indian. And the Indian kind of stands out a little bit, but it is because Indians were brought into South Africa en masse in the late 1800s to work on sugarcane fields, and it was a British escapade to do that. It ended up so that somewhere around the 90s, there were like a million Indians in South Africa, and so large a population and so large a defined group that they actually have their own representative in the Indian Parliament in India. A unique situation. Now, so those are the Indians. Most of them lived around Durban, the coastal subtropical town next to the sugarcane fields. The next grouping are whites. Go look in the mirror. That's more or less what a white is. In our case, they are typically either British descended or Dutch, French, German. The proportions of Dutch, French, and German vary a bit, but I received a paper just the other day of a vast DNA study, and it says that it's something like 45% Dutch, 30% French, and something like 25% German. My own makeup is 40% Dutch, 30% German, 25% French. Okay, and you can usually tell these folks by the fact that they speak either Dutch-derived Afrikaans or they speak English. Now, there's also a large population of people that are referred to as black in South Africa. Now, there's no confusion in South Africa on that subject, and there's no sort of history like in the U.S. on that. In South Africa, there are something like 11 different distinct black nations, each with territory and each with a language. Some of those languages are mutually intelligible, some of them are not. In broad terms, the black people of South Africa are in two groups, those along the east coast and those behind the 11,000-foot mountains. It's a little bit like the split between the Algonquin people or the guys to the west of the Rockies, like, what are they, the Blackfoot and... I think Flathead, etc., the Salish people on the coast, as opposed to the Sioux and those people on the east. Now, the colored...
Hold that thought, yeah. Because we're a little bit overdue. We're having some incoming guests and whatnot in the studio, but Christina's back with the buttons again. We've got to take a little quick break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Harry Boogens, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of.
Go. Okay, on to the next category, Harry.
Yeah, so the question then, what is in South Africa, what was and still is meant with the word colored? And in South Africa, it means everybody else. Oh, sorry, I should exclude Chinese people specifically. Okay, so the South African government wanting to get money out of China was very quick to make a separate category out of Chinese people, and they were rebranded in the last several years as, wait for it, honorary black. To the great never-ending amusement of my South African Chinese friends here in Canada. Boy, did I have a good time with them on that.
Honorary.
Honorary black. Okay.
Honorary. Especially when me and them went to do some music recording, and we ended up with a black recording engineer. And, oh, man, that got to be seriously funny. he laughed his head off. Okay, so when you look at the vast bulk of the so-called colored people in South Africa, they are descendants of directly the Khoi, a tiny handful of Sun people who remained, and of relationships typically between white guys and women out of any other population group. This goes back to like the 1600s and 1700s, particularly ex-slaves. In that respect, there's a similarity to the U.S., but the thing that the U.S. does not have is an indigenous black nation with a culture, a language, a history, and a territory. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that Americans have difficulty connecting with, is that in South Africa, the indigenous black people are exactly that, indigenous. Yeah, they invaded from the northeast, but they did so over hundreds of years. Nobody's trying to say that they're not indigenous. They're there. So that's something that you don't have in the U.S., and most black people in the U.S. trace their history back to slavery. In South Africa, as I already indicated, there is zero of that. There's no such trace. And so, in South Africa, the term colored is abjectly different meaning as compared with the U.S. In the U.S., it was used in all kinds of ways. You know, then it was colored, now it's black. You decide what you want to call it. That's your game. It's the U.S. I'm not going to go nuts about that. I'm just telling you what it means in South Africa. Now, if you go to a typical colored person in South Africa, to the degree that there is a typical one, you will find that his mother tongue is Afrikaans, just like mine. You will find that he speaks it with a distinctly Cape accent. They have a way they sound when they speak. No, it's not like they have a different culture. It's that they have a different intonation and way of speaking. So I am, as far as I'm concerned, they're all Afrikaners just like me. I see no problem of any sorts there. But historically, people seem to think it was important to make a distinction. Oddly, those people who did that all went comfortably to their graves and didn't have to live with the consequences of the garbage they created. So, the political garbage they created. So what you find is that the vast bulk, by far, like 90-something percent, of the colored people of South Africa live in the Western Cape province. They're in the West Cape, or I should say, they're in the western half or western third of South Africa. The actual province of Western Cape is a smaller territory. They're in the West Cape and North Cape. That's the place where they mostly live. And that is why the political party that governs that part of the country is a different one. It's the Democratic Alliance, whereas the ANC, African National Congress, is based on the black people of South Africa, and that commands the East. Because the ANC has the national majority, they're in control of the country, and they're doing their best to edge out everybody else in the West Cape, and they're not succeeding. Now, at some point, if you're interested, we can talk about what's happened in the last few months in South Africa, because I'm now more worried about the U.S. than I am South Africa. Yeah. What happened with a very recent election in South Africa is that the Nelson Mandela's African National Congress lost its straight majority. It lost it because the left wing of that party, mostly Zulu, broke away to form a brazenly communist Umkhonto we Sizwe party, carrying the name of Nelson Mandela's old military wing. And interestingly, because the ANC lost its majority, it now had to make a coalition government. It elected not to make a coalition with that breakaway left-wing communist party. It made a coalition with the Democratic Alliance, which is very much colored and white based. The colored people in South Africa realize that if the blacks have total control over everything, they're dead. They know they're dead. The Indians know if the blacks have control over everything, they're dead. They've lived part of that before. The white people know it too. And so you'll find that the other three groups try to sort of hang out together when the chips are down. And now you see it with the formation of this coalition government. I do not know what caused the ANC to avoid making a coalition with its own left wing, because it could have worked, numbers-wise. I suspect that various parties in the Western world must have been breathing down their necks and telling them what was going to happen if they did. That's all I can think. Because they don't particularly take note of anybody in South Africa, not even their own voters. They just pillage the country.
They just plow ahead.
Yeah. That, historically, it's a one-party state because they had such total control that they would make all the decisions. It's like a situation where the Democrats have total control of the country, which they've done with government structures. They have total say. Theoretically, they have total control of the country. So they don't actually go to Congress to make laws and formulate new laws, whatever. They write them up at their party Congress, and then they bring them to Parliament for a vote. Don't look now, but that's more or less what's happening in Europe.
Yeah, well, and okay. That's what they'd like to have here.
The European Parliament is not a law-making parliament. It's a law rubber-stamping parliament.
Yeah.
the laws are formulated by a commission. So the good news is that the ANC's overwhelming majority has fractured, has broken, and somehow something forced them into a coalition with basically the whites and coloureds by any other name. That's what you have down there. The problem in North America is you have a Democratic Party that for the last several years under Obama and then again under Biden was hell-bent on turning the country into the South Africa that I left behind, that I couldn't stomach any further, and that everybody can go and take a look at and realize just how pathetic it is. And you got to worry about making sure they don't get away with it. And now the interesting thing for me in the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, maybe 2 weeks, is that somebody has, it sounds to me like they've locked their candidate in a cupboard and put duct tape over her mouth. And
gee whiz, who could that
someone
be?
Behind the scenes is reversing in Trump's direction at the speed of light.
Yeah, has it been as entertaining where you are to watch her take his policies and pretend that they're hers? It's like, do you really think we're going to fall for that?
Mm-hmm. Well, she's avid.
If you guys fall for that, don't bother talking to me because then you.
Oh my God!
Don't worry.
Yeah, we're gonna have to go into witness protection in our own country.
Yeah. She's advocating a wall now at the border. So,
yeah.
I mean, gosh, what a novel idea that was.
This is one news anchor girlie who confronts, I don't know who the Republican guy is, confronts him about Harris, and he says, well, she was the border czar, and all the stuff happened under her, and the news girlie says, sir, she was not the border czar. She was not the border czar. And then somebody plays the clip where her
she's
job
like
is
the border
announced.
Czar. Yeah, I know. It's the what is it? Richard Stengel. That guy's got to be kind of riding high. He must be doing really massive underground seminars with. Kind of all of our media here, it's really it's
well, but there
weird.
Is all kinds of trouble. I was watching an interview with Mark Zuckerberg of all creepy people.
Yeah.
You know, considering what he had done.
Right.
And how he had tried to kill off Trump, and not literally, I mean, his accounts and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And he's interviewed about the shooting. And he gets all trembly and his chin starts sort of shaking. He's clearly emotionally done in. And he says, you know, when the man rose up like that and put his fist in the air and said, fight, 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 it was amazingly inspiring. That's Mark Zuckerberg who said that. I couldn't believe my eyes. I'm looking at the TV, and I re-ran
it.
I wasn't BSing myself. Mark Zuckerberg said it was inspiring. Followed shortly after by a letter to Congress in which he said that the government pressured him in the past to shut down, like, the Hunter Biden story.
Right.
And all of that. So now he confesses.
Well, it's kind of interesting because, like anything else, right, you want to play along with your captors, but at the end of the day, they're still your captors, and they're ultimately going to try to make you do stuff you don't want to do. Even guys like that eventually figure out that their wiggle room goes away. We have to take a really quick...
What is that syndrome that Patty Hearst supposedly had?
Yeah.
Where you associate with your captors.
Yep, the Stockholm Syndrome.
Stockholm Syndrome,
yes,
right?
You think that they're your friends, and then you go, oh, wait a minute, I'm still captive.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So it looks,
apparently
it
looks they're not
like the left
friends.
Has Stockholm Syndrome right now.
Yeah, a little bit. And then after that, then you try to escape again. typically, unless you just join them. There's that. I guess you go one of two ways. You join them or you try to get away. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Billions. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Yeah, we can't talk about all this, Harry, without playing the Twilight Zone because, honestly, it's just too fitting.
Yeah, you played Crazy earlier.
Yes, I thought you might like that too.
Yeah, I had to play that thing personally many nights on stage. Lead guitarist and singer, so that's my other great vice.
Yeah, what kind of what's your music thing you were talking about?
Yeah, I think I mentioned this at some point to you that I'm using software called Jamulus to jam with folks all over North America most evenings.
What do you play? Do I
hear it from all sides?
Nice. Well, what do you play? What is your musical instrument of choice?
I played the guitar ever since 1963.
Oh.
And I'm historically, I'm a harmony guy. So, most recently, I'm sort of used as the, what does one call it? The guy that does all the charts for people to play from, and then I got to count them in, and then, you know, if I tell them, well, don't you want to call another song? And everybody says, no, Harry, you call it. And then after a while, they tell me I'm the leader of the band, but there's no band.
So you're a cross between the conductor and the maestro, I guess.
Yeah, so I keep
telling ringmaster?
The guy who plays guitar and sings a little, you know, can I also sit out now and then maybe? Just, you know, possibly?
No.
Anyway, that's it. So this is what retired band guys do now.
So they loiter online with other retired band guys and play
music? on the internet, and then when they're tired of playing, they talk American politics.
Nice. So when you guys are playing, is it an open channel that other people listen to, or do you guys just... Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Huh.
You know, you sort of measure what you say, because I got friends who are devoted Blue Dog Democrats, and I got guys who are pretty far right on the Republican side. I've got pro Ukrainians, I got pro Russians, I got them all.
Wow. Well, you know, it's a good way to get information. If you kind of chat with everybody, you can makes it a little easier to sort out what you think. When you look at, I mean, this election, good grief down here, but when you look at sort of where we are politically and the number of people left over from like that Obama era that are still in charge of things, what do you see from your vantage point? Kind of through that South African lens a little bit.
You are busy finishing off Obama's third term.
Yeah.
That's what's going on, from my perspective. That's what it seems like. But you're now in uncharted waters where they've realized that that path has taken them to the edge of a waterfall. And they are swimming at a furious rate backwards against the falls. That's the picture I have. If I had to draw a cartoon of this, I would show a guy with a DNC placard stuck on his neck, okay, swimming furiously upstream away from the edge of a waterfall.
Yeah.
Okay, backpedaling like crazy.
Well, I think that's why you're seeing a lot of these media folks kind of backpedaling, going into self-preservation mode because they know the garbage they've been spending the last, 7 years.
Yeah, it's like, the prices are going down. It's like, they're super not going down.
Now they're just kind of lightly, maybe it's not as great as it... Yeah, it's not as great as they say it is, and it never has been. And they're all getting caught with their pants down, and they're trying to.
My I don't know what to call it. My American sensor, sensor, has typically been fairly solid, and my read of things is that pretty much everybody over 35 is finally done with this whole disaster.
Yeah, the great DEI experiment.
I think ordinary American out there, the guy who actually has to do a job for a living, who has to pay a mortgage, has to put his kids through school and college, okay, they're done. They are so sick of all this, okay. I think if somebody says something woke near them, they're going to slap their heads off.
Yeah, no, I think that's why you're seeing a lot of these major corporations ditching the whole DEI thing too. They see the handwriting on the wall. They see what's coming at them like a freight train, and they're backing out of it to kind of preserve what they have. You look at what John Deere did, Lowe's, Ford just announced last week that they're backing away from. A lot of this DEI stuff, and there's a reason.
Yeah, realistically, there's a chance that this woman might win if they can keep her in the cupboard and keep the duct tape over her mouth, okay? Because they don't really care who's the president. They have their power anyway. To them, it's just a figurehead. It's a dummy who's up there that they can move around.
Mm-hmm.
So if they, if they keep her shut up, both by body and by mouth, they could possibly take this thing. But my read is away from these college campuses and university campuses and media, the regular American is so done with this stuff, they can hardly breathe. But I got to tell you, there's one thing that bothers me. And while I would like to be on the record as the guy who gets emotional about the preamble to the Declaration of Independence, which I should just remind you, the Dutch kind of wrote for you back in the 1500s already, so that was a large piece of that was copied, but nevertheless, it's a highly inspirational document, and can you get me going on that subject, okay? However, you cannot afford another Jeff Sessions.
No.
You cannot afford another player up there behind Trump who goes into a boxing match with people who've never heard of the Queensberry rules,
right,
who will play dirty and kick you between the legs.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you stand there preaching about the Queensberry rules while you are being destroyed.
Right.
Okay? You cannot. Nobody in any form of sport, whether political or otherwise, can stick to the rules if the other party does not. If the referee doesn't call foul, then you have no choice but to kick or bite back. And Jeff Sessions did not understand that, as far as I'm concerned.
No, and interestingly enough, I think Trump was looking at it like a business, first time around. It was business, but we call it government, but it's the same basic structure. And, okay, I guess if you really look at it from the 30,000-foot view, maybe. But he didn't clean out the underpinnings of all of this, and that's kind of why it's still
and,
there.
And this is why I'm on record in some places saying Trump needs to clear out the three top management levels of all of these bodies. Okay? Really, it's bad. It's seriously bad.
Yeah.
It's a mess at the CIA. It is a mess at the FBI. It's a mess at the Department of Justice.
Well, here, I'll give you just an on-the-ground example from here. We have these dams that are basically all gone, four of them, three of them are hydroelectric, so electricity generated for 70,000 homes, whoosh, gone. And the river is black. We've got pictures of the water just from last Thursday. The water's black. There are no fish. But there was a commercial at the top of the hour talking about how now the river has opened up, the salmon will be returning. But, like, scientists are basically saying, yeah, maybe 50 years from now. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous.
Guarantee you the salmon aren't returning.
But in that whole process, to illustrate your point, there is a woman who works for the Yurok tribe who is their attorney and has been extremely successful, actually, in arguing this this case for quite some time. Well, would you be surprised to find out that number three at the solicitor's office in the Department of the Interior, who is the lawyer who handles all of the interior stuff for water, is her husband. So when you said go down three levels, I'm like, that's terrific. That'll take out Daniel Cordalis. Perfect. I mean, it's amazing.
It's everywhere, though.
You look at that and you go, hey, wait a second. Isn't that, that's the same name. What? That's the husband? Yeah. So you, I mean, we've taken that whole analogy of the fox watching the hen house to a new low.
Yeah. I mean, to be very honest, I grew up believing that the premier police function in the world is the FBI. Now I see them as worse than the KGB. They're the enemy of the United States. I mean, it's terrible what they've done.
Well,
it's terrible.
And you know, all deference to my own gender, for heaven's sakes, some of those women, how embarrassing. I'm like, oh, God.
You mean like the Secret Service lady?
Yeah. You get them in these positions like the Secret Service during the assassination. It's like, I don't know. I'm thinking a tall man would have probably been.
Well, they have that.
Better.
I'm literally talking about the boss of the Secret Service who testified.
Then there was her.
Yeah,
I know, but
I
see, there's all this. We've got to give jobs and we've got to hire and we've got to promote based on things other than merit. And as soon as we walked away from a meritocracy, well, it's never going to work like that. You can't run a business like that. Nobody hires a guy to cut their yard who isn't good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't look at his lineage whatever.
When the boss of the Secret Service testified, I looked at this, and I noticed that the Democrats were climbing as hard into her as the Republicans. And I turned to my wife and I said,
the wheels have come off.
They've already decided to sacrifice her. She knows she's going to go. All she has to do is sit there and basically say nothing, take all the flack, take all the junk on her back, and then resign. And she'll be looked after the fact. Okay? And so now all that needs to happen is various Democrats can grandstand at the hearing and make it sound like they're doing something sensible.
I just, yeah. It's just, It's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing, and it's ridiculous, and it's very easily remedied. And so,
but
we have a tiny bit
of good news here in Canada, which I should share before we run, and that is that the guy I call Baby Doe, you know, like Play-Doh and Doe,
okay.
the Trudeau baby that's been our prime minister for way too long.
Yeah.
He is now persona non grata, mostly in his own party. Everybody's turned on him. What he did to the truckers was one move too far. And you know about all that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
So we now are facing an election here in British Columbia. The provincial Liberal Party, that's Trudeau's party, is the Liberal Party, or otherwise known as the Party of Government, The Liberal Party was so affronted with the whole thing and felt so blemished that they changed their name to BC United.
Oh, well, that has a nice ring to it.
Even as that, they felt they couldn't make it, so they've now joined forces with the BC Conservative Party.
Oh, nice.
Well, that's a move in the right direction.
In deference to your career choices and your time on the top of the grassy knoll, I found a snazzy song to go out with, and we will talk to you again very soon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for coming on, Harry.
You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars, and let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand.